Hey, y'all. Pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel, which you guys can find on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we are talking about the Iowa State game, TCU game, Kansas game, and then the upcoming games against Texas Tech and Baylor. Just kind of running through the gamut here. Y'all, that Iowa State game was something, the TCU game was something else, and that Kansas game was disappointing. It was that something was disappointing something. So it's all a bunch of something.
Yep.
That's hard to argue.
All right, thank you for listening to Pretend We're Football. We've been your host, Will Bazer. Tim, where can we find you on the basketball court?
I really couldn't think about anything other than the word something for a hot second there, but I feel like that is one way to describe Texas's basketball season. It's something.
Yeah, it's been something.
It's been something. Yeah. So
it's not nothing.
That is true. It is not nothing, Tim. It hasn't been nothing. It has definitely been something. That something, though, is up to the viewers and the fans to yell at Chris Del Conte about in the in the town hall by asking him, why can't Texas shoot free throws? I don't know if that's the correct avenue to go about asking that question, but that was one of the questions that Chris Del Conte was asked.
It's trickle-down free throws. Trickle-down free throw advice is you start with that, and then he asked the question to Shaka, and Shaka asked the question to the assistant coaches, and assistant coaches talk to the players, and that's how it works.
And the players are like, oh, you know what? We should practice that. That would be a good idea. Why haven't we been doing that before?
I stopped in August. We'll get back on this.
That's a good suggestion, sir.
Yeah.
Why didn't we think about that?
Now please donate to the Longhorn Foundation.
Iowa State. Yeah. You want to get into that, or we want to keep on fucking around here?
Look, I'm only here for the fuck around, so we can talk about Iowa State. But I feel like really where I shine is the fuck around. So we can just keep doing that. How's that?
All right,
Tim, you fine with that? You're just gonna keep doing that?
I'm good with talking about Iowa State, Will.
Well, I do want to ask
you
all
this.
I like
your ideas.
What are y'all?
Judas. Iowa Judas.
What are y'all's thoughts on the David and Goliath comment from Chris Del Conte?
I didn't see it. What?
Yeah,
what did he say?
He sort of mangled the David and Goliath analogy by saying we should be Goliath, which works really well when David is not around, but not so much when David's nearby. So he tried to play it off with rationalization of, well, you know, I'm just saying we should if we're gonna be Goliath, we should own it. And it's like, that's not, again, does not really answer the whole story thing. You're not really working this one out. So
okay,
not that I've ever said anything that is not held up under further scrutiny into a microphone, but I imagine he would like that one back.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't know for sure where I would take it. But here's, if you're thinking about, if we take both the TCU and the Iowa State games and think about like what we can, you know, extrapolate from those. Here's something I think that will maybe kind of lead us into what we'll ultimately think about for the Kansas
Tim
game.
Is the Tesla autopilot of this show. He just course corrected us straight back. Like we might have gone through a lawn or two, but we're back on the road.
Tim, let's talk about Iowa State first. So Texas did what they had to do against Iowa State, right? It was one of those games where if you lose it, it's really bad, and it was looking like that was going to be the case. But in the end, they ended up pulling it out. Is there anything, though, in that game that really does stand out to you that you can say, yeah, that's the one thing that can be applied to the rest of the season or can be applied going forward or can be applied to the Shaka Smart story? What is it from that game that really stands out?
I guess the key piece for me that I'm going to go to with that game and TCU, sorry, I don't mean to jump the gun here, but
damn it, Tim. I have Jericho and Matt all are good. Mapped out.
Yeah, I know. I'm really sorry. Jericho and Matt are good. Like, to me, that what really sticks out about that, about the Iowa State game is yeah, Courtney came through and hit some big shots at the end, but I really feel like we've got a this is an example of you know, the Iowa State game, like you said, would have been a bad loss. It's actually not going to be a very good win. Iowa State's in jeopardy of dropping down to the third quadrant for us as far as that home win. So, you know, it's not as if this was a game that I'm happy that we had to kind of scrap to win at the end. But, I you know, we were struggling against Iowa State when it felt like we kind of allowed ourselves to get in a little bit of a rush. We didn't find a lot of open shots for Jace. We didn't see a lot of, it felt like we allowed Iowa State to control the game from like the tempo standpoint, from the kind of shot selection standpoint that we had. And then at the end of the game, Courtney just sort of played, I don't know if I want to say hero ball, but certainly played like, I'm going to be the person who is dominating possessions towards the end of this game. Hits a couple of threes. I think maybe scooped a layup. Maybe hit a couple free throws. Yep. I don't remember if he hit a couple free throws late. But really dominated the game. And did so kind of against TCU in some spots, too, late in the game. And that was, again, we'll come to this a little bit later, but that was a very interesting thing for me. And I think we've been able to see enough times that if we're playing defenses that are marginal, Courtney becomes a really viable person in our lineup to kind of like, okay, we're gonna put the ball in the hand of someone that we think maybe can kind of carry us over the top and be a streaky shooter and get us there. And I think against Iowa State he was that. You know, and I like his confidence. I like the way that he read the defense well in those screen and roll situations. And there's other things in those games too. I mean, we need to talk about Donovan Williams. We need to talk a lot about Jericho, I think. But what stood out to me in that was like in some of those situations against a team that's not a wonderful defense, Courtney really did a good job of being a solid scorer for us in a time of need.
Courtney was pretty bad for the first 80% of the game. But in the last 20%, he was really good. And I think you're going to sort of just have to deal with that going forward because he seems like he's going to be a pretty up and down player for the rest of the season. He's not going to be as solid as he was as a freshman. His highs are maybe a little higher, but his lows are definitely lower. And it's in terms of the Iowa State game, I like that the team came back from being down. They outscored Iowa State by 10 in the last 10 minutes. They took a game that was very losable, and they won it, which they absolutely needed to do. They have a very narrow path to the NCAA tournament, and that would have gotten almost non-existent with that loss. But they pulled it together. They did what they needed to do. They played good enough defense to limit Iowa State, and they took care of business, really, at the end of the day. It's not going to be a sexy win. I mean, like Tim pointed out, it's probably going to be, at best, a quadrant three win at the end of the day. But it's much better than being a quadrant three or quadrant four loss. So it's not – there's not some huge upside to it, but the fact that they played pretty good defense on Tyrese Haliburton, made it as difficult on him as they could for a future lottery pick, and just they got the win.
Yeah, and really the one thing that I took away from that game was Texas finally didn't fold in the second half. In fact, it was quite the opposite. Texas this year has really taken these second halves and mangled them, to put it lightly. They've done really well in the first half, and then the second half has been where they fall apart. Go ahead.
I might quibble here just a little bit in terms of, so when I think of the word fold, I think of a team that chokes. I think of a team that really fucks things up because of the sort of the largeness of the moment. I think it's fair to say that Texas has failed to execute in the second half pretty regularly, especially against higher level teams. So
that's what I'm talking about here, but yes.
And yeah, and that's fair. I just, the fold thing makes me feel like they folded against West Virginia, right? Like that game was a debacle from pretty much the jump, right? Like after the first 8 or 10 minutes, it was toast, and they folded against that team. But against every other team, well, maybe Providence, I don't know. Like, it just seemed like folding to me is sort of a, I don't know, like you're giving up kind of thing. And
okay,
so
they have done worse in the second half than they have in the first half.
Thank you.
It was the opposite. All right.
Yes.
Does that make you happy there?
Yes, the pedant is happy. Yes.
Okay, good. Well, Texas finally did better in the second half than they did in the first half. And they took what they did in the first half and they added to it. They added on top of it and did well. They executed better. Yes, it's against Iowa State, but it's something that they haven't done at all this entire year. Well, they haven't done regularly this year. And then they did it against TCU in a game that they had to win, but was still a good win, right? But I'm going to ask y'all, how good in reality was that win for the Longhorns? Down the road, what is it going to mean? Does it mean anything at all?
I would call it a moderately good win. Beating TCU at home is not going to do anything for like, if we're talking in terms of the NCAA tournament resume or theoretical NCAA tournament resume, beating TCU at home doesn't do anything to move the needle. But any win on the road in the Big 12 is going to help your cause, especially given that you are going to give up home losses to Oklahoma and Kansas and, you know, probably a couple others along the way. You need to flip some away games to keep your March hopes alive. And TCU, while not being a great team this year, they are a dangerous team. They are definitely one that is capable of beating Texas in a given night. They were able to keep Bane in check for most of the night, which is, you know, not something everybody can do. So it helps. It's a, you know, it looks good on any resume, whether it be the NCAA or the NIT. But I don't know if I would say it's like, it's not like they went into Waco and won, right? Like it's a marginally good road win.
Yeah, for sure. It's a game where it totally is dependent upon what else we combine it with. Right. So if we beat Baylor at home, that TCU win becomes pretty big. If we beat Tech at home, that TCU win becomes pretty big. If we don't beat those teams and we lose to Oklahoma on the road or whatever, then it doesn't really matter. Like Johnny said, it's not enough in and of itself to say like, wow, that's going to really move the needle for the people in the committee. But if we get there and we're on the bubble, then that's a win that probably can make a difference just from a standpoint of like, okay, well, that might bump us up. What would it be? You know, somewhere in the 5 to 7 spot range from KenPom. A win like that helps. And for our listeners, you know, TCU beat Tech by double digits in Fort Worth. So, you know, again, that's to be contextual about that. That's a positive thing for us. So, but again, I want to talk a little bit later on. I don't want to bury the lead here, but I want to talk about Ramey, how he looked in that TCU game, how he looked in the Iowa State game compared to then how he looked against Kansas. And I thought that, you know, once again, if you look at the numbers, and I'll pull them up here real quick. Sorry for our listeners that I'm so bad at this. Jace, you know, got really hot from three in that game. He had a couple of really deep bombs late in the shot clock where he was put in tough situations and he bailed us out.
Yeah, he hit one of those from like North Richland Hills. It was pretty far away.
But I really think that this is another example of while both Jericho and Matt didn't have incredible games, they had very solid games for them. And because we can count on both of those guys, even when they're not bringing their A-plus games, Matt still had 9.7 assists. Jericho still had 9 points, 9 rebounds.
Now he had
13. Actually 9 points, 13 rebounds. Yeah. So you know, I that that's you can do a lot of good things with a point guard and a big man who are playing like Matt and Jericho are. And last year we went to TCU and got shit on.
Yep.
Or at least we got beat by them. And this year, with a arguably weaker team than last year for us, we won. So, you know, I don't want to be as negative as we've been this year with our podcast, and then not give some props for a win that would have been nice. You know, if we win at TCU last year, we're not in the NIT. You know, if we so stuff like that. So we'll have to sort of see how the year plays out. I'm certainly not going to take these two wins and then take that to mean, oh, all right, well, we've turned it around. Now we're ready. But they're, you know, the Iowa State win is a win you have to have. Good on us for getting it. The TCU game is a win that we've been asking for the last 3 years. And to get it this year is probably too little too late, but I'm happy that we got it.
I'm just trying to do real fast a quick tally of what Texas can potentially do to get probably to potentially 9 wins. Yeah. That means, you know, you can win against Iowa State. So right now they're at 4. You can win against Iowa State, at Iowa State, TCU at home, at Kansas State, and then versus Oklahoma State at home. That means you have to take this Texas Tech game that's this week, this Saturday, potentially the at Oklahoma game. I mean, or you have to take at Texas Tech or Virginia at home or Baylor at home. Happening.
I wrote this down prior to the Kansas game. And at the time it was 4-4 with 10 games left. And I said that they should win at home against TCU and Oklahoma State. And they should lose at Kansas, at Tech, and versus West Virginia. So that's 6-7, and there are 5 games left. The 5 games left are, I rank them in order of quote-unquote easiest, which is, they're not easy, but easiest. And it is at K-State versus Tech, at Iowa State, at Oklahoma, and versus Baylor. Like, that's sort of easiest to hardest for me in terms of the 5 remaining games. So for them to even sniff the idea of the tournament, they got to take 3 out of those 5. If they want to make it, pretty sure they got to take 4 out of those 5. I don't know that they will, but that's the path, right? Like if they want to get to 9-9 or 10-8, like I think a 10-8 Big 12 record will get them in, especially given that they will have beaten some combination of Tech or Baylor in the process.
And 10-8 is more than we were expecting coming into conference play. We were expecting them to be around, even the beginning of the year, we're expecting them to be around 9-9, potentially around there. 8-10 or 10-8 was sort of
the numbers
we were throwing out.
Yeah, and I think for me it was a matter of I mean, there's some recalibration, right? Because prior to the season starting, I thought the Big 12 was probably going to get like 5 or 6 teams into the NCAA tournament. And it seems like the safer bet is 4 at this point. Maybe if Texas can pull that 10-8, then maybe 5. But right now it feels like Baylor, Kansas, West Virginia are in, and then probably Tech. But beyond that, everyone else seems extremely questionable. So if you're sort of keeping track of things in terms of expected wins versus expected losses, and expected is a very generous term on the win side, it would be the home games against TCU and Oklahoma State. The expected losses would be the Kansas game they lost this week, at Tech, and when West Virginia comes to town. So that's, like I said, 6-7 with 5 to go. And if they can pull 3 or 4 out of that 5, That one will help in terms of getting them to 9 or 10 wins, but it would also mean they got to pull at least a couple of road wins along the way. So,
well, does that TCU road win make you think this is more possible than before?
No,
Tim.
Sorry, I'll answer for Tim. No.
Maybe. I mean, so I enjoy hearing Johnny talk about it, and I guess it's nice being on the opposite side of like, well, what if maybe we could do that?
Here come the knives.
For us to get to 10-8, that would mean a very different team than Shaka has coached for the last 4 years. You know, I want to believe. I love our players. I root so hard for Texas. I sit in my basement and I watch the games over and over. And I just, it's hard for me to see us getting to 10-8. You know, can we win in those games? Absolutely. I'm not giving up hope on the West Virginia game. We've seen our teams get smacked in Morgantown and then beat that same team at home. Like, that's not impossible.
True, actually.
Playing against West Virginia is a different animal because they have such a different travel schedule than us. I don't remember for sure what day the West Virginia game is at. I can look at that real fast.
That's a Monday after.
It's a Monday.
It's a Monday after we go to Kansas State.
Right. And West Virginia plays against TCU away. So they have, you know, so that means either they're going to be on like a 5-day road trip, you know, depending on. So like, yeah, absolutely. I don't want to say 9 or 10 wins is impossible. But a couple weeks ago, I said, I think it's more likely that we win 5 games than it is that we win 9. And I was pissy. I was angry about that. We just got shit on by West Virginia. But I don't know. If you asked me, can we do it? Yeah, we can. What do I think our win total will be when we're done? I think that 7 or 8 is more likely than 9 or 10. And I think Johnny probably thinks that too,
yeah.
Even though we want to, you know, hope that the best thing will happen.
Yeah. I mean, if I was putting money on it, I would put it on 8 and 10 at this point. I really think if they don't beat Tech this weekend, then a winning record is out of the question. Cause like that feels like a game they really have to flip if they're going to do this. Cause it's while it's, you know, if you look at the win probability, it's not, it's like Texas is a mild underdog. Still, just the fact that they were able to take one from one of the top 4 teams in the Big 12, that will help their case. But
right.
Well, I want to go ahead and, you know, one thing that brings me back down to reality is that Kansas game. And I feel like I'm more upset about that Kansas game than I should have been because Texas historically wins never in Kansas, once in a blue moon. Yeah. But I feel like I'm more upset about that game than I should be because, right, Texas, again, another year, they're that close to pulling it off. Not as close as last year, but that close to pulling it off. They're neck and neck with Kansas, and then they just couldn't pull it together at the end. It was actually pretty reminiscent of the game that Texas and Kansas played in Austin this year, where just Texas couldn't take the next step to pull the lead out in front of Kansas, like hold on to a lead or get the lead. They were just a possession or two behind, it seems, a lot of the game, except for that 5-point lead they had for a blink of an eye.
Yeah, it's, I mean, here is the formula when Texas plays Kansas as of the last couple of years. So Kansas has not led against Texas at halftime since 2018. Like, it has either been tied or Texas ahead in all like 4 or 5 matches since then. So this is not an uncommon thing. Honestly, this is sort of feeling like a True Detective season 1 time is flat circle kind of situation where Texas plays a good game in the first half. They build some sort of minor to moderate lead. Kansas makes some adjustments at halftime or they, you know, get out the coffee or whatever they need to do. And they go on some form of a like 14-6 or 15-5 run over the next 5 to 6 minutes of the game. They take the lead and then they keep Texas basically at arm's length most of the rest of the way. Like maybe Texas gets close, but they never quite get over the hump. Like this is a script we've seen a lot. And as much as like I sort of expected Texas to get its ass whipped in this game, frankly. Like, I was sort of disappointed in that. I was hoping to watch this game with zero stress, being like, oh, well, you know, Kansas is going to be up by 10 to 15 points most of the game, and it's just, we're going to watch it, and I'll write the recap, and I'll play some God of War and go to bed. And then Texas, like it always does against Kansas as of late, plays them tough and hits some shots and has some good offensive wrinkles and some good defensive wrinkles to keep things close, and they sort of match up somewhat well with Kansas, and then halftime comes and shit goes south. Like, it's just it's frustrating, it's disappointing. Even if it's not unexpected, it's still disappointing to run through this same script over and over again.
Sure is. Not a lot to add from that. Yeah, Kansas is very good.
Yeah.
You know, they're really good. So they're long. They're terrific defensively. Man, they're good defensively. They have a lot of solid athletes, I guess, if I could say, like, it's like their body composition is just solid. You know, you think of like a Jace or Donovan Williams who are just string beans or whatever. And you look at Kansas's guys, and they look like they could handle some pounding, and
they look like they got to spend a couple of years under Andrea Hootie.
Yeah, I think so. Right. So, you know, fingers crossed for the future, but it's tough. And you know, I remember hearing or reading or whatever it was a long time ago, how kind of sort of surprisingly to me, Bill Self always circled the Texas games when Rick was here, of how important the Texas games were to him, that he wanted to be peaking at those times and would like save wrinkles for the Texas game, because he understands just how much theoretically Texas should be the biggest threat to Kansas and what they want to do. And all I can ever think about is, like, we're not going to beat Kansas because it matters that much to Bill Self. Like, in those, when we play Kansas, unless Corey Joseph is banking in a three in 2011 or whatever from 28 feet as the shot clock expires, or whatever it was that one day in Lawrence, Jacobin was going nuts and Jordan was playing well and whatever. Other than that, like, Bill Self uses his timeouts perfectly. Like, he used his damn timeouts perfectly, you know, and he used his personnel rotations really well, and he got Jericho in foul trouble at the right time, and he understood that they, you know, if they played Courtney to have to dribble weak side or to the baseline or sidelines, that they'd be fine. Like, it just seems like they always have the answer for us. They might struggle with other teams, they might have issues with other teams, but they seem to always scout and know us really well. And maybe that's because like their coaching staff is that much better than ours, but I don't know. It feels like that was another example of that, like you said, Johnny.
A bit of perspective is in order, because I feel like Texas fans, and I fall prey to this sometimes myself as well, we think we should be competing with Kansas, at least on a year-to-year basis. Maybe not historically, but on a year-to-year basis. The issue is that we have not. Since 1950, Texas is 8-32 against Kansas. We've won 20% of the time. While Shaka being 1-10 sucks, he flips one of those losses to wins, and he is in line with our historical average against Kansas. Rick Barnes at 1.1, 3 out of 4 against Kansas. Other than that, he was, I think he was 4 and 15. Like, he won about 20% of his other games against Kansas. We feel like we should be battling with them, but they are on a whole other level than Texas. They own Texas harder than Texas owns Texas A&M in football. The winning percentage is worse for Texas against Kansas in basketball. The best coach that Texas has had in the last 40 plus years still barely got up to like 26% against them all time. It's rough. And Texas is generally outmatched in this. As much as we want to sort of talk ourselves into it, and Lord knows I would love to beat Kansas in Lawrence or at home, wherever. I don't care where. It doesn't matter if it's in the Big 12 tournament, if it's in the NCAA tournament. It doesn't matter. If we both end up in the CBI, I will fucking take it. But historically, Kansas has beat the shit out of Texas. And it's just how it is. It's going to take a long time to reverse that trend.
One thing that really overshadowed the entire game was a comment from Jay Billis on Shaka Smart's job security, and it really got Texas Twitter fired up, where he said, Texas fans expect to go to the NCAA tournament. This is a team that is scratching and clawing to get there. If I were the athletic director at Texas, he would be in no danger. And he added, he's one of the best people you'll ever meet. Now, that got Texas fans riled up. And I think I understand the reason for it, but I want to hear y'all's reasoning behind, well, even if it got you angry, and if so, why it pissed off Longhorn fans, because I have a reason and an understanding of why it did.
Well, I mean, for me, I think it's a pretty good example of what somebody says when they're not actually the athletic director in charge of the cash, right? Like, it's, I think just about everyone involved in college basketball thinks Shaka is an amazing person. Like, I have talked to a variety of people over the years that all think he's
so was Charlie Strong. Charlie Strong is a great person.
Sure.
He is a great person.
Yeah, he's not dead. He is a great person. So I get this desire to sort of stick up for him as a person. But at the same time, it's fucking year five, Jay. Like, leave it to a dude who is from Duke and a lawyer by trade to be divorced from the reality of the situation because he's just affluent and white and doesn't have to actually get his hands dirty. He can say things from the announcer's booth that it's fine. He'll just throw that shit out there and maybe people will get all angry, but then he'll just quote a rap lyric and everybody will be back on his side again. I like Jay. I think he is a good announcer. I think he's good at breaking things down in the given moment. He sees things well. He obviously does his homework, but he's wrong on this. Like, there's no reason for a dude who's in year five in this situation to not be under some pressure.
I think one of the reasons it really kind of hit a nail for Longhorn fans, though, is because what he was saying, though, is really, this is what Texas fans should expect, is this level of play where they are right now. He's saying that Texas fans right now expect too much. They expect to make the tournament every year. And he's saying that's an unrealistic expectation. I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation. I think that should be the expectation, is to make the tournament, or at least, at the very least, be the bubble team. I don't feel like that's something that is too much to expect. It's what's kind of become what you're expecting at Texas, what you should expect at Texas. And he's saying, hey, Longhorn fans, what you're seeing under Shaka Smart over the past 4 years is really where you should be. You should be fine with that. That should be what you should be okay with. And Longhorn fans are not okay with that.
I think we also just don't generally like being told what to think. Like, there's also that.
True.
I think it's fair to say that we should expect to be in contention for the NCAA tournament. Like, so you're never going to make it every year, but you need, like, 11-win seasons should be a significant aberration, right? Like, you shouldn't miss the NCAA tournament 3 times in 5 years at this point in time. Like, it's fine if it happens once in a blue moon because, you know, talent cycles being what they are, and, you know, injuries being what they are, sometimes that shit happens. But it's fair to want to at least be in the conversation for the tournament.
Boy, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you both. I don't think he meant anything about this is who you are, Texas fans. That's not how I took it at all. Because if he wants to say to Texas fans and the people around us, well, you should be happy with making the tournament every once in a while, or this is sort of like your lot in life, like, that's bullshit. I mean, Rick, did you not realize Rick made it 16 out of 17 years or whatever it was? I totally get that I'm going to kind of be speaking out of both sides of my face with this. I think he's right, and I think Shaka will probably get fired anyways, but I think he's right. The big thing that I think that is probably true here is we have sat here on this podcast and said it would surprise none of us, not even a little bit, if wherever Shaka is next, he's in a Sweet 16 in the next 5 or 6 years. That would not shock me one bit. If he's in the Sweet 16 in the next 3 years,
yep.
I wouldn't be surprised. If he goes someplace that has a decent basketball tradition and he can get things going, I believe he's got it in him to be that. Now, he has unquestionably done poor enough here at Texas for us to look at his results, win and loss wise, and say, dude, this isn't good enough. This is not good enough.
Yeah.
And if you want us to be comfortable with these results, the answer is no. But the other side of that coin is, clearly he knows it's not good enough. Everybody around Texas knows it's not good enough. Can he be the guy? And from that standpoint, I really do think, even if he gets fired, which I will not say a single negative thing about if he gets fired. If he gets fired, I will watch him walk away thinking, I still think he could have turned it around. If you stick with this guy for another 4 or 5 years, can he turn around? Yeah, I think that he could build something pretty cool here. I'm not sad about the fact that he probably won't get that opportunity, but I think it could probably happen. Now, the obvious response is there's a lot of people out there who could be really good role models to college athletes, right? You don't just keep this guy around because he's the only one that could be positive for them. But I don't think you can also look at Shaka as a whole without taking that into consideration. He's a really, really good dude. He loves his players. They appear to really love him. That matters. That matters. Not as much as wins and losses, but it matters. And Jay talking about that, I think, is a good insight of understanding what that kind of thing does mean. But when I heard him say that, I didn't think of like, oh, this is as good as you're going to get, Texas fans. I think it's him saying, you know, obviously he thinks we should be competing for something that we're maybe not competing for this year. And if Texas fans are just simply saying, fuck it, we're done, I'm finished with this bullshit, Shaka needs to be out, that's okay. But I think there's at least a reasonable response that, like, smart basketball people would say, no, give him another 5 years. Trust us, you're going to get there. And we want to be like, F that S. But I think there's a lot of good basketball minds who say, you know, it's possible. And so, as a fan who watches all the time, who's always there, who lives and dies with their team, and a lot of times dies, unfortunately, with Shaka here, it makes sense for us to be where we're at. But I don't think you can look at some of these basketball minds who are saying, give him time, I know it sucks, he'll get there, and be like, what the fuck do you know? It's just they're obviously in a very different emotional state, and we've lost in the ways that we have. That have really taken its toll on the fan base.
I think there is something to be said for recognizing that someone is good at their job while also understanding that they did not align either be through their decisions or circumstances outside their control or some combination of the two, that they were not able to optimize at the place they are at now. Like, you know, maybe if you met your wife 5 years before, 5 years later, she never would have become your wife because you were in a different place, right? Like, it doesn't mean that you two were incompatible. It's just that the timing didn't work out, the things didn't work out, and that it doesn't mean y'all won't both be successful somewhere down the road later in your respective endeavors, right? Like, I feel like this is sort of what it is with Shaka, is that I still, given that sort of what Tim is alluding to, I have seen and heard from enough people who think he is a legitimately good coach, that think he is destined to be very successful at the high major level at some point, that I think it will happen somewhere. But it is also reasonable to note that it has not happened here, and that no one gets an unlimited amount of time to figure their shit out. So maybe he has taken some teachable moments from this in terms of how he builds a high major program, in terms of how he gets things rolling from the start, and applies them to his next gig, and he just kills it there. In which case, Texas fans are going to lose their minds because they'll be sitting with some other coach and watching Shaka take another team to the Final Four and be like, what the fuck? Why can't this happen here? And it's like, you know.
Are you saying that there's a chance Texas fans won't look at themselves? No, and think that's, about yeah, what no, they, role they happen to possibly play in that.
They'll start a thread on Surly about Shaka and how he was obviously great, just like they're doing with Rick Barnes now.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. Like I'm on the same page with you, Tim, in that I get why people are done with him. I understand the reasoning. I understand the logic behind it. I don't have any refutation of it or rebuttal to it. But it doesn't change my view that Shaka will probably be a successful high major coach somewhere, probably later and somewhere else.
Tim, I know you have a hot take on Kansas, on the Kansas game in Courtney Ramey. Care to share?
Well, all right, let's take it even from a little bit bigger picture than that. So you're probably aware, both of you, that over the last 80 minutes, if you're talking about rebounds and assists from TCU to Iowa State to Kansas, do you guys know how many, if you total up both his rebounds and assists over those 80 minutes, how many he has?
I don't know.
One.
A Google? Oh, no. Okay, one.
He has one rebound. That's it. He had no assists. He's had no assists in his last three games. I might be wrong about that. Maybe he had two. Anyways, shit. Maybe we need to start again. Let me look. I want to check this out real quick. But I thought for sure I was right. So, against TCU.
Ramey had zero rebounds and zero assists in Kansas.
Okay, so he had one rebound and two assists against TCU.
And zero in Iowa State.
0-0 against Iowa State.
And 0-0 in Kansas.
Right. Okay. So he has two assists and one rebound in his last 80 minutes of play. Right. So
isn't that 120 theoretically?
25 and 25 and 29.
Okay, using his actual minute totals. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. No, it's all good. So so in 79 minutes of actual game time where he's on the floor. And of course people probably have seen like his plus minus against Kansas was negative 26.
Ugh.
Which is
not good.
No. Tough look for our guy Courtney Ramey. But here's kind of the deal, and when we talked about TCU and Iowa State with him earlier, why it makes me pretty nervous and kind of a damning thing for Shaka after I just spent, I think, probably like 4 minutes talking about maybe like I wouldn't be bad with him getting another chance or a longer chance.
I've completely turned around now that you mentioned that.
If you think about the Kansas game and the first half, would either of you be able to say who was our ball dominant guard in the first half?
Jericho Sims.
Who was our ball dominant guard in the first half? I'll repeat it for our
other than Jericho
people.
Sims, Matt Coleman,
Kai Jones.
Yeah, Kai Jones. Kai Jones. That's the next. Yeah,
Kai Jones actually
guard
dribbling.
Guard.
Yeah, he's like a really tall guard to me.
Jesus Christ. All right. So Coleman played one of the better halves against a good team that we've seen him play for a while. He looked really good in the first half against Kansas, and so we looked really good in the first half against Kansas. If you go back then, so if you think about that first half against Kansas for Matt, and then you go back to both TCU and Iowa State, when those games got into their waning moments, it became Courtney's ball. He became ball dominant. And what we kind of saw from the rest of the game of Matt kind of spearheading our, our dribble penetration offense, and he's kind of in charge of setting up looks and being the guy who's going to facilitate for, 27 minutes in that game, and then the other 13 or 8 or whatever when Matt is on the floor, or maybe not on the floor, it becomes Courtney's ball. And it seems to have become Courtney's ball when the moments get the most tight. And against Iowa State, the dude nailed a couple threes and made a layup and hit some free throws and like pulls us into a win against Iowa State. And against TCU, again, he made some good decisions with the ball and we were pretty good. Well, the biggest difference between TCU and Iowa State and Kansas probably is the defense.
Yep.
Kansas' defense is much, much better than TCU's and way light years better than Iowa State's.
Yep.
And yet we allowed Courtney to be a ball dominant guard late in the game against Kansas. And he could not do it. He could not turn the corner. He didn't even try to turn the corner. He couldn't split the defense as far as like trying to split the double team on screens. He never ever got comfortable. I don't think he went left a single time in the second half with the ball off of a screen.
And I don't recall a single snake dribble from him.
Not once. Not once. And yet we allowed him to be ball dominant. We went out of our normal offensive set where Matt, and clearly Matt did not have a great second half, or at least I should say he had a particularly bad 4 or 5 minutes in the second half. Matt had a couple turnovers, missed a couple of threes. He had a rough stretch. But even then, to consolidate on top of that, we allowed Courtney to kind of do his thing, even though it was clear against a defense that can force him left, that can keep him from turning the corner, or even trying to turn the corner, that there's not much that he can do. And yet we still went to him. So what does that teach us about going forward? Well, first of all, I can really not like Chris Beard, as much as I already don't like him. I cannot like Scott Drew. I can hate Scott Drew as much as I hate him. I can think about, you know, what we're going to see against Oklahoma at Oklahoma. Bob Huggins, they're going to know that Courtney can't turn the corner. They're going to hard hedge him. They're just simply going to. And so if we need to win some of those games and we find ourselves, as we have all three of the last three games, of giving him some of those big playmaking minutes late in the game when it's crunch time, I just don't know that we can trust Courtney to be good. Like, we can trust him to be good at home against Oklahoma State because their defense isn't very good. But in the biggest moments against the toughest defenses, he just hasn't found a way to do it. And yet we still go to him. Now, maybe Shaka makes us all look silly. And, like, I knew he'd get there eventually against really good defenses, and we got to have that kind of player. But what it seems like right now is we allowed what Courtney did against TCU and Iowa State to dictate then what we did against Kansas. And it bit us in the ass big time, where we went from down 2 to down 17 in like 3.5 minutes. And I just don't know why we allowed that to be the case when we had another 26 minutes of Matt being the lead ball handler. And, oh, we're in it when Matt's the lead ball handler? Well, we'll still give Courtney a shot. It's a tough decision-making process, but it was there.
So I want to go ahead and look forward here, because Texas has a shot to secure themselves potentially a spot in the NCAA tournament with these next two games, with Texas Tech and Baylor. First off, with Texas Tech, I want to ask you, why do y'all hate Texas Tech so much? Before the show, we were watching Texas Tech and Oklahoma, and y'all are really cheering for Oklahoma to win that game. Why? Why do y'all hate Texas Tech so much?
The love that Beard gets, it drives me insane. Yeah. First of all, like, we've talked about this. He walked into Tubby's players, including a very, very good, either junior or senior point guard in Evans. I don't remember for sure what year Evans was when Beard got there. He walks into that. He does a good job. Great. Awesome. But like in the same way that almost no Texas fans are going to credit Shaka for his first year with Barnes's players, I don't think you should really credit Beard for that same circumstance. But then you also juxtapose that with the idea that, like, okay, so he takes Culver and Craig Smith, right? That's his name.
Zaire,
that's the kiddo's
Smith.
Name. Zaire Smith. I don't know why I always go to Craig. Sorry. Zaire Smith.
He looked like a Craig.
and Zaire ends up being a draft pick after his first season at Tech, despite being like a 3-star. And Culver ends up being, like, I want to say Culver, by KenPom's ratings, was easily the best player in the country last year. Now, we took Jace. In hindsight, should we have taken Zaire or Jarrett over Jace? I think you can make that argument. But I don't think that Beard made that decision because he was some kind of, like, savant, unstoppable recruiter who just saw something that no one else saw. No. He happened onto those guys. He made some good decisions. They ended up being fucking awesome. And yet now we think of him as like this unstoppable guy who must make that kind of decision all the time. And it's just stupid. It's just stupid. Like, congrats. Hey, you got this one right, Beard. Way to go. But the fact that Texas fans seem to like think he's the second coming and don't understand that, like, hey, he got this one right. Let's see if it happens again. Hey, he had a great 3 years. Let's tap the brakes before we anoint him. It just drives me insane that we would give this guy all the benefit in the world because he happened not to two really good players and just shit on a number of other coaches because they had a rough couple of years.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it for me. It's that and Tech being sort of the new money of the Big 12. Like, it's, you watch the, like, it's, I'm gonna catch hell for this, I'm sure, but the Viva the Matadors guys used to be cool. Like, I enjoyed talking with them a few years ago. They were sort of, they had the same sort of gallows humor as a lot of the SB Nation Big 12 sites. Like, Smoking Musket still has that. You know, some of the other sites, Wide Right, Natty Light, they have it. You know, there's a certain sort of, I don't know, detached sarcasm I really enjoy from those guys. And Viva used to be that way. And now they're just like, I don't know, they're like MAGA heads, but for Beard. And they can't stop themselves. And it just feels like a cult. And I can't deal with it. And it doesn't help that, you know, the fact that Shaka is not doing well means that Beard's name gets brought up in every third post game thread. And it's just, I'm just tired of it. I want to see them go to the CBI once so that people will be like, oh, okay, he's actually mortal and not the living son of Christ. That's where I'm at. That's pretty much it.
So then, can you tell me, since, you know, Beard, I guess, isn't the second coming of Christ, what happened this year? Why? What happened to make Beard a man this year, a mortal person?
I mean, it's, you know, some of it is what Tim talked about in terms of the couple guys that he landed in Culver and Zaire. Some of it is that he did... one of the things Beard does really well is he mines the transfer market very well. He found guys like Owens and Mooney, and they were great additions, and he deserves credit for that. He and his staff deserve credit for that. So they did really well last year in turning over the roster. This year, they have done less so. Like, they're still a good team, and they still... I mean, if I had to bet right now, I would guess they probably make the NCAA tournament as like a 9 or 10 seed or something like that. Like, they're still a tournament team. So there's something to be said for turning over. I mean, I think they lost, what, six, seven players from last year's squad, and they're still probably going to make the NCAA tournament. So he does deserve a level of respect. He is obviously doing things. He's got things rolling there. So... there is, I want to give credit. I just don't want to go into the hyperbole, I guess, is sort of where I'm at. But yeah, they have struggled because they don't have a Jarrett Culver on offense. They had hoped that Ramsey would be that guy. And he has moments where he's that guy. Moretti has not blossomed into being the same guy he was. Like, as a primary option, he's not as good as he was being a secondary option. The offense that Beard chooses to run is one that sort of really relies on upperclassmen with a lot of experience in it, and they don't have a ton of that this year, so they struggle to score in a lot of instances. They're still very good defensively, not as good as they were last year, but they're still very good. And so... because they have the offensive sort of lulls and issues that they have from time to time, they're much more mortal than they were last year. And that's really the difference. The defense is still, while it's not historically good like it was last year, it is still a very good defense. But the offense has taken enough of a step back that it means they lose some games that they would have won by a couple points last year.
Make no mistake, Chris Beard can coach. The dude can coach. I don't love his style. I don't love his personality. He's obviously a very capable coach. You don't lose what he lost from last year and come back and make it work. Like, even like, obviously you were seeing in North Carolina right now how tough that is. Like, just truly how incredibly high level of a coach you need to be to do that. And Chris Beard's very good. I don't think he's elite as a coach. He's very, very good. So yeah, whether it's, you know, and I think it's gonna be interesting to see too, like, does Ramsey stay? Like, you know, some of that kind of stuff. Well, he had some good luck with that. And, you know, we'll see next year where they're at and kind of what he's able to do as far as, piecing things together with that too. But, I don't think it's really a surprise that he lost what he lost. And, cause again, I want to say again, I don't mean to belabor the point, but I want to say that KenPom had Culver as his best player by a sizable amount. Like whatever KenPom's WAR or whatever it is, like his efficiency ratings, Culver was number one, kind of sizably.
He was number one, but Ethan Happ from Wisconsin was not too far away.
Okay,
so he was Culver, going to, like, Happ, and then Edwards last year.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll keep on seeing. You know, obviously he's got some good stuff rolling there. Like Johnny, I think that probably Tech will end up being 11-7, maybe as low as 10-8 in the conference. I'd be surprised if they're much lower than that. They've got some pretty winnable games coming up for their schedule. But I don't, you know, they were 5-4 last year through their first 9 games. They're 5-4 now through their first 9 games. But I don't think that those two examples are comparable from what we can expect from them moving forward.
All right, the next game, Baylor, is a game that if they do win, that secures them a spot, but seems like it's a long stretch for them to potentially do that. How would it look if it did happen? What would need to happen for Texas to defeat Baylor at home?
I mean, it's going to be tough. Like, I think the fact that not only can Baylor shoot the three really well, their defense is just really good all around. Their defense is really good. The only thing I can think in terms of maybe they start looking ahead to West Virginia or something, and that becomes the way that, you know, Texas becomes the trap game for Baylor. I don't know. I don't hold a lot of hope for that one. I mean, Baylor has sort of had these lulls where they take a team that they should have beat sizably. Like, they got up something like 22-6 on Kansas State, and Kansas State managed to bring it back to within about 4 or 5 points. And then, you know, ended up winning that game Baylor won that game by 6. So it's like, maybe you take advantage of one of those things, but it's this particular Baylor team seems like if they're going to lose games the rest of the way, it's going to be to, you know, the Kansases and the West Virginias rather than the Texas teams.
Yeah, that seems probably right. I guess if you want to put a feather in your hat, that might be the opposite direction is it's tough to win 22 games in a row. You know, they're on such a win streak that, you know, they're going to have to throw a clunker in there somewhere. And maybe the K-State game was their clunker. I don't know for sure. Obviously, it's tough to be sure. It does seem a little bit surprising that Baylor has been able to just seemingly maximize all year long. I mean, they've played at such a high level. You know, so again, I my hatred for Baylor is pretty well documented. But I don't think that you can do much other than say, hey, they're a very good team. You know, I if you ask me what's the more likely win, I would say Texas Tech is the more likely win. But it wouldn't shock me if Baylor is due for a dud here at some point. So, you know, we'll see if that happens. It's sports. Anything's possible. Jericho and Matt play well. We happen to get a big game from Andrew or Donovan. Keeps on coming on like we think he can. I mean, that Donovan's a guy that has the athleticism and length to take advantage of somebody no matter who he's playing against, right? You can't really stop his athleticism if we play well. And so, I mean, the chances are there. And I think, it's just simply tough, kind of like the year that we did win at Kansas, right? The Jacobin and Corey and Tristan and Jordan year. We fell off at the end. Is that what's going to happen to Baylor? Probably not, but, you know, It's sports, so who knows?
Yeah, I think given the way things have gone for Texas this year, what will happen is that Baylor will have their clunker at home against Oklahoma State on that Saturday and then come out and beat Texas by like 24 points because it'll be sort of the West Virginia game all over again. Just like a coach spends a weekend screaming at his guys and they come out and just beat the crap out of Texas. That feels like that seems like a more likely scenario than Texas actually winning the game.
Probably so.
So, all right. I kind of got off track here. So let's get back to what really matters. Pretend you're getting to know us. That's okay. What the people want to hear. So I have a question for us this week, a really good one. You have 1 hour to eat 5,000 calories. What food or foods do you choose? What is your meal?
So my answer is going to be deceptively simple because I feel like I have done this before unintentionally. And I'm going to go to a Brazilian steakhouse, like a Texas Day Brazil or Fogo de Show, and I will just start pounding whatever food they have there because it's going to be a lot of calories. It's going to have that they will have put everything through some form of butter. It's bacon wrapped everything. Like, I feel like I could knock out 5,000 calories in an hour in that place. That's my choice. Plus, pretty sure I did that on Thanksgiving by accident. So it seems like a pretty repeatable thing for me to do. Just don't be around me when the poop comes.
Will it be worse or better than Taco Bell?
Worse, because Taco Bell is just the squirts. Like, this is like, I'm having to pass a meatloaf. Like, this is not going to be, you know, you have to like.
Must be a soccer player.
Yeah, I'm going to have to like stretch, you know, like it's just like limber up before I go in there, you know, do some Kegels, that kind of thing.
Tim?
Texas Day Brazil is quite good. I'm with you. It's quite good. I guess I have two answers, and they should probably be in cahoots. So the first thing I would say is a Jim Beam and Coke and Coke Zero is 200 calories. So I guess 25 Jim Beam and Coke Zeros would be my answer.
What if you just did them with regular Cokes? That's like 130 calories right there.
That you're not wrong. But I think what I'd rather do is be eating the cracked black pepper Triscuits while I am drinking all of those Jim Beam and Coke Zeros. So I guess I'd probably be like, let me look. I've got the box right here. Triscuit box, 120 calories per serving.
It's just sitting in your room, just open.
Oh, I love Triscuits. They're delicious. So probably, yeah, I would just absolutely pound whiskey and Coke Zeros, and eat cracked black pepper Triscuits until 5,000 calories happened.
He's gonna get coronavirus.
How in the world would you do that in an hour?
Have you watched the man eat Triscuits?
Will?
That's a lot of Triscuits. Let me do, like, what's a Triscuit? Triscuit, like, I know what a Triscuit is, but what is a Triscuit, like,
It is a calorie of
a Triscuit.
30 calories per cracker.
Not per cracker. That can't be per cracker.
20 calories per cracker.
A single
20
serving of Triscuit, which is six crackers, is 120.
Okay, so,
5,000 100
Triscuits, that's 2,000.
41.
And then you got to drink how much? That's 15 of your Jim Beam and Coke Zeros?
So that's 250 Triscuits. You have to do this in an hour?
I can do that shit. No problem. Yes. Oh, yes.
I feel like that's the graham cracker challenge. What is it, the graham cracker challenge where you try to...
No, just the saltine challenge.
Where you try to do that and it's just like your mouth just runs out of water.
Don't tempt me, bro. Don't you tempt me.
Another option for me would be... What is the bread you get at like Indian buffets? The
naan?
Naan, yes.
Or
that shit is high calorie and I love it.
Yeah,
I would eat the hell out of that. I'm thinking, some naan bread and some of the rice from Fogo. Like, I'll go to Fogo de Show or Texas Day Brazil, bring the naan bread with me. Set up like a stack of five or six of those and just use it to sop up the fat and sauce and whatever from the various meats I'm eating. There we go. That's it.
All right.
William?
All right. Okay, I see y'all.
And then a brick of poop that's like 4.5 pounds easily.
Frick. 87 Keurigs.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It'd be,
oh, wait,
it
wait.
Would be a solid 2.5 pounds.
Hot, 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 hot. Hot, 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 hot.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think the way I would go about doing this is a stop at Whataburger. Because I take down honey butter chicken biscuits pretty damn easily.
Ooh.
Okay.
And I've learned that a honey butter chicken biscuit is 775 calories. So.
Yeah, it's only like 7.5 of
them,
give or take.
That's seven honey butter chicken biscuits. So give me like 6 or 5 honey butter chicken biscuits and like a large or 2 large Cokes. I think I could do it. I think I could do that.
Yeah.
So like what are like Olive Garden's breadsticks or what are the cheddar biscuits at Red
Olive
Lobster?
Garden,
like what are those?
Olive Garden breadstick calories is one breadstick is 140 calories. So
Oh wow, that's not near as much as I thought it was. Okay, so what are the cheddar biscuits from Red Lobster?
The what? 35 breadsticks. Could you put down 35 breadsticks in an hour?
No.
Oh, hell yeah. If I could dip that shit in the minestrone soup, yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right. What was the other one you were asking?
The
cheddar biscuits from Red Lobster.
Okay, cheddar biscuits.
Those are got to be higher than...
Biscuit calories from Red Lobster. 160 calories. So again,
no.
Can you put down...
Fake news. I thought they were like 400.
Can you put down
good
31
grief.
And a quarter cheddar biscuits from Red Lobster?
So what's going on with the Whataburger things? How are those 800 calories?
I'm guessing it's the honey butter.
Everything is just doused in butter. And it's like there's... Look, Whataburger is like... I worked at a Whataburger in high school, and it was nothing but butter everywhere, and everything is fatty, and it's...
Just Paula Deen's
like one stick of butter is at 180... Is 810 calories? So...
Okay, so what you're saying is, could I eat 6 sticks of butter?
I
in
tell
an
you
hour?
What I could do. I could melt them and drink them.
Oh, like oh man, I feel like at some point, what is that?
How no, I'm, it's going to be that? A terrible outcome. But I could do that. Like just down
a cup of butter like, is yeah. One cup of butter is 1,627 calories. So,
yeah, so that's like not even 5 cups of butter. Like I could down that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's 3.
Oh my god, what would your life be
like
40 minutes in?
Could you do that? 3 cups of butter.
Yeah, 3 cups of butter. I could do that.
Have you seen
I mean, I'm going
to drink 3 cups of butter. You would throw up after 1.5 at the most.
Yeah, have you seen
you'd be blasting chunks everywhere.
Have you seen
like
a measuring cup, Johnny?
Like I said, I've
2 cups of whatever, like when I feed my dog 2 cups of food, right? Actually 1.5 because I'm a good owner.
Mm.
2 cups of food, like that is a lot of fucking. That's a big serving. 3
yeah, it is.
Cups.
Like
of
I
butter?
Said,
you
all
you
I'm saying is I could get it down. Like I'm not saying we'll pay. I will pay severely.
All right.
I'm going to spend the next 48 hours on the toilet, but I will, like, I'm...
Or you'll die of a heart attack in the next hour.
Yeah, like, your triglyceride count is infinity.
What hour are you drinking 3 cups of butter? The other hour, you're in the ER getting a cardiac bypass.
Like, we'll just set this up like that man versus food, except off to the side, I've got, like, paramedics with saline IVs and just... They're like, we're going to have to balance this out. This is going to be a thing.
I read an article one time about a guy from Estonia whose blood alcohol content was over 0.7, and he was driving. All I could think of was like, what would your blood butter content be if you had 3 cups of butter?
Let's see. This is...
Like, what percentage of your blood would be butter at that point?
Yeah,
5,000 calories is 32 beers.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't do that. But the butter somehow seems
doable.
Yeah, it's all about bracing yourself for the after effects, I think.
Okay, so how many spoonfuls of lard is that?
Oh, there's lard. No, lard, I can't do that. Yeah.
Lard is 3 ounces of lard is 763 calories, like bacon fat. Bacon fat is...
Yeah.
So, let's see, 750.
Could you drink?
See, here's what we need to do. We need to, like, we need to melt butter and bacon fat together and then let it cool. Like, oh, just sort of...
Like cookies? Like yeah. Bacon fat and butter cookies?
Incredible.
We're trying to do like a reduction sauce, right? Like, get all the bullshit out. Like, we're going for maximum calories in the least amount of space. Like, okay, we're going for a quasar of calories is what we're
like
trying to do.
Basically like a pill that is 5,000 calories.
Yeah.
Fuck,
my
it,
girlfriend
let's do
just
it.
Texted me, stop talking about things that make you fat and wrap it the fuck up. So I think on that note, thank y'all for pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
On Twitter at BitterWhiteGuy. I'm on the Horn once a week, where I am now shamelessly promoting Pretend We're Football.
Hell yeah.
Mainly so that Will will stop negging me online.
Do you say hook 'em on those?
No.
Radio. Oh.
No. Well, good. I mean, that means he's not, you know, cheating on us.
No, I guess.
No. I will leave y'all in an instant for them, though. I'm just letting you know ahead of time.
Wait, what?
I'm like, yeah, this. Wait. Look,
we have something special here, though, Johnny.
You guys are my relationship, but they're my cancer list. That's what I'm saying.
Wait, what?
Yeah, the cancer list, right? Oh. Like, if you get terminal cancer, like, you gave a list of people, like, it's like you have five people, like, I mean, you could make it somebody like Scarlett Johansson, or you could be like Will's sister, Tim's wife. Like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, you have a get out of jail free card for a handful of people. And my sports cancer list is Chad and Kevin. Sorry, guys.
Who would you do first?
I'm kind of okay with the finger cuffs thing, honestly. Just like a pair of Chinese finger cuffs.
Wait a second. Are we talking about friendship or are we talking about banging?
We're talking about friendship here. He's talking about like getting caught in a Chinese finger trap with
a Chinese finger cuff of friendship. Yes. That's yes. Yeah.
And I'm not in there?
No, you're more like the person I settle down with later after I've had my rendezvous.
After he's gotten a few Chinese finger traps.
But you've got cancer.
Right. Yeah.
So why would I settle down with a cancer patient?
Because I have a will, and you want to be in it.
Oh, that's legit.
Yeah. You want that GameCube or not?
Want.
Okay.
Sure do.
All right then. We figured this out.
Yep. Thanks. Twitter, Inside Texas Hoop, no S, and on InsideTexas.com. Wow, what a great website! Just incredible. A lot of great contributors, great content creators, and me. I'm also there, so come check us out.
What do you do, Tim?
Well, I write when Joe and Justin ask me to. I might think about live posting for the ITA indoors when Texas goes to Madison in a couple weekends for the tennis stuff, or I'll be at Iowa State because then I can drink at my brother-in-law's house. They have a nice basement. I also wade through the bullshit of Texas fans being Texas fans.
Tim.
I mean, if we're going to throw away Mac Brown, we're going to throw away Shaka Smart, right? If Texas fans will shit on that guy, then they'll clearly shit on Shaka Smart.
Tim.
I think. Yeah.
Where are you most comfortable? If it's not the basketball court, where are you most comfortable?
Well, so people who are at home, you can't see where I am right now. So I'm on my couch. My wife got me a new couch for Christmas. It's fine. It's a fine couch. Got it.
Wow.
Slumberland.
You are very thankful for that couch. I mean, I can feel the gratitude coming off of that statement.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife's fine. She's fine.
That's why she's
on
my
me?
Cancer list.
Right. So I don't stretch as much as I need to. I have really, really tight hamstrings. So my left leg, when I'm sitting down, almost has to be curled in underneath my nutsack. So like my left heel should be underneath the ball sack. That's just where I'm most comfortable. My right leg can kind of be wherever, but I also need to be like, I need to kind of, when I'm playing video games here, I'm not very good if I'm relaxed, like my legs are out. I need to have my legs in so I can be kind of leaning in and really focus and in the moment. Yeah, that's where I'm most comfortable. Well, okay, just a second. And then with my whiskey and coke in my right hand, as my left hand is moving my character around with my thumb on the left joystick of my Xbox One controller.
Interesting.
Just a second. Hold on. I got to recreate this for you guys. Oh, no, I dropped it. Shit. Okay. My cell phone case will be taking the part of my Xbox One controller as you guys see what I look like. So this is some great radio, great podcasting right now. This is my comfort zone, Will.
Well, good. I'm glad you're in it right now. Thank y'all for pretending we're football for the past hour. You guys can find us on the Hornscast channel, which you can find on any podcasting platform out there. If you're not listening to it on your favorite one right now, go ahead and find us there. On that note, thank y'all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook them.
We're like the Dungeons and Dragons of basketball podcast, but we've never been slayed.
Hell yeah.